Good morning, everyone. This morning, Washington's focus is, of course, on the upcoming State of the Union address of President Obama tomorrow. The rest of the nation is probably worried a little bit more about the Super Bowl, the fact that it's the Packers and the Steelers.
Right.
After some exciting games yesterday. We'll be talking about both of those things this hour, but they've really been rubbing their eyes in wonderment in the nation of Tunisia for a week now, where they woke up and it's 1776. In the early light of freedom and the overthrow of a dictator, Tunisia is both experiencing an exhilaration from their newfound freedom and also continued violence as government loyalists battle protesters who are angry with the interim government's ties to the former ruling party. Listen.
We are here to get our dignity and to get the power to the people again. We lived 23 years of oppression and 23 years of dictatorship. We want to start a brand new life, and we want to get rid of the old regime and the old party.
Those are protesters who spoke with our partner, the New York Times, describing what the Times and everyone has been reporting, that it's difficult to find people who aren't associated with the ruling party to take over and rule in this nation. So there is chaos that continues even this morning. But also, as I said, a certain amount of exhilaration, a week of a completely uncensored life. After 23 years of dictatorship, we return now to two voices who've helped us to understand what's going on in Tunisia throughout this crisis, revolution, call it what you will. David Kirkpatrick, Middle East correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, joins us live from Tunis. Also, Ben Abdelkarim Abdullah, a photographer and blogger from Tunisia. Ben, good morning to you. Have you been to a bookstore recently?
Yes. Since the January 14th, I go every day to downtown, and there is a library in the Avenue Bourguiba, which is exposing the window shop, a set of books that have been censored for decades.
And people are gathering just even to look at the books, not necessarily to buy them.
Exactly, because both of those books, as indicated on their cover, they are just samples.
Right, and it's actually difficult to get banned books in a country where books are banned, but they're starting to come in now. David Kirkpatrick, you told us earlier this morning about just the popularity of one particular book, a biography of the former First Lady of Tunisia. I believe it's written in French, but everyone wants a copy of that. Why?
That's the hot ticket. Well, she is the most reviled figure in Tunis by far. Even before Ben Ali left the country, at protests demanding his ouster, people would confide in me, you know, he's not so bad. He's done some okay things for the country. But his wife, she's got to go. They would chant. She was a hairdresser before she, lucky for her, married the president. And they were chanting, policemen, open your eyes. The hairdresser is ruling you. Because her family came from a very poor background and somehow miraculously, after her marriage to the president, arose to pinnacles of wealth here and took over a lot of the biggest companies and the most valuable real estate in the country. So they became a particular object of popular ire, especially as the joblessness rate soared around the country.
And there has also been a number of news reports as following her, the Ben Ali's family, her daughters, as they travel from France and other countries, and the lavish lifestyle that they're using, is the residents of Tunisia expecting to see Ben Ali's family in court?
I think they would love to see Ben Ali's family in court, and they would certainly like they're applauding the freezing of assets associated with the Ben Ali family, and they're ripping down the mansions, ransacking the mansions associated with the Ben Ali family. But I'll tell you, right now, we're in a confused state of play. The interim government is proceeding to arrest a fair number of people either related to the first family or close to the former president. I don't know whether those people are really being charged with what, whether there's evidence against them, what they're being accused of, or whether that is a kind of retribution and revenge designed in part to placate the people, because the interim government, still dominated by members of the old ruling party, is having a real hard time establishing its credibility. The people here in the streets of Tunis don't believe that the revolution is over. They think the revolution is gaining momentum and will succeed when this gang that's now in the cabinet fully resigns.
And David Kirkpatrick, Middle East correspondent for our partner in the New York Times, there are many gangs here. There are people voting with their feet and coming to Tunis to register their disapproval with this new government, coming from outlying areas. Where are they staying? How are they expressing their political views?
Well, that's the real news of the day. Beginning yesterday and accelerating through the day and the night, caravans, so-called freedom caravans from the kind of hardscrabble South where this revolution first began is more or less a bread riot. They're proceeding to Tunis, and they're setting up camp outside the prime minister's office in the old city. They've brought some mattresses. Locals have given them more mattresses. A bunch of women are camping out on the porch of the Ministry of Finance, relabeled the Ministry of Thieves, and making sandwiches to pass out to the crowd. And they're camped out, and they say they're not going to leave until the prime minister, previously Ben Ali's right-hand man, resigns. Last night, the police made an effort to disperse the crowd with water hoses, witnesses tell us, after the curfew. But the army says that they are defending the protesters from the police, trying to keep the peace in part by restraining the police officer. One officer confided to me off the record this morning, or at least not for attribution, that was actually quite difficult to keep the police in check.
So let's
know how this will end.
Let's get a response from the perspective of a Tunis resident, Ben Abdul Karim Abdullah. You're a photographer, you're a blogger. I know you haven't been to the square where the caravans are, but is this a sign of things coming apart, or is this a sign of a new kind of national solidarity being expressed?
It's a total joy to see people supporting their cause until the end. And as I said, you know, David, this government is not, the interim government is not really purely democratic. It has to go, and those people think so, and they're going to defend their ideas and protect their democracy until the end.
So, Ben Abdul Karim Abdullah, you've had an uncensored internet for the first time as of a week ago?
Yes.
What's that look like? How does that change on the screen?
Changed a lot. You know, my own blog and 145 exactly blogs, the most brilliant blogs were censored. YouTube, Dailymotion, Flickr, and other, you know, major services were blocked. We got like nothing from the internet, and many Facebook, Twitter, and Twitter accounts were blocked also. And it's like, you know, freedom in the internet is freedom for it's like a freedom of speech, freedom of art, to have easier tools to publish photos and videos.
And an explosion of page views all throughout the people who are posting. Ben Abdul Karim Abdullah, local photographer and blogger, telling us what it's like in an uncensored Tunisia. And David Kirkpatrick, Middle East correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks to both of you.
And now let's check in on some of the other headlines this morning. It is 15 minutes past the hour. Four police officers were slightly wounded when a man opened fire on a Detroit police precinct. Police Chief Ralph Godby described the crime.
A lone African-American male, about 38 years old, entered the Plymouth Station, the 6th Precinct, indiscriminately began firing inside the precinct.
One or more officers then returned fire, killing the man. Three officers were hospitalized for injuries. The fourth was wearing a bulletproof vest. All the officers are expected to survive. In Iraq, officials say a second car bomb targeting Shiite pilgrims in the holy city of Karbala has killed 10 people this morning. An earlier blast killed 6 pilgrims. The Los Angeles Times is reporting that a security force affiliated with Prime Minister Nouria al-Maliki's office has been holding detainees for months in a green zone prison in Iraq. Some detainees have been held up for 2 years and given no access to their lawyers or family. And speaking of trials, the first Guantanamo Bay detainee to go to trial in the U.S. will be sentenced today. Ahmed Gilani was convicted of just one count and acquitted of 284 others for the 1998 bombing of a U.S. embassy in Tanzania. He's likely to be sentenced to life in prison. Mortgage companies Fannie and Freddie have spent around $160 million tax dollars defending themselves in fraud lawsuits since 2008. In the 2 years since they were taken over by the government, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have had losses totaling about $150 billion. And no more for the JCPenney catalog. The retailer is getting rid of it along with its entire outlet business. JCPenney will also close some stores and the call center locations in an effort to streamline operations. You're listening to The Takeaway, where you can always reach us at 8778. My Take. Coming up, a look ahead to the Super Bowl, a classic old school lineup. The Packers and the Steelers are set to play.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.